Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk, and thank you for watching. First on the docket, let's talk about Lori Vallow and her attorney. Who is this Mark Means? Second, public outrage grows to keep nurse Crystal Lee Kenny in prison. Third, Harvey Weinstein gets an extension in his civil cases. Fourth, R. Kelly is getting no love on being released. Fifth, would you like some lime with that corona? And sixth, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk, and thank you for watching. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day to watch us. We know there's lots of things that you could be doing, and the fact that you take the time to watch us does not go unnoticed. We appreciate you. If you have not already subscribed, we would ask you to please subscribe. Hit that little bell so that you receive notifications. And as always, leave us a comment on what we talk about. We want to know what you think about the topics. First on the docket, let's talk Lori Vallow and her attorney. Who is this guy? All right. First, for those who do not know, Lori Vallow is accused of multiple counts of desertion of her adopted son, JJ, and her daughter, Tylee Ryan. In a quick nutshell, neither one of these children have been seen in a while. I'll go through this much more detail here in just a moment. To be as straightforward as possible, Miss Vallow's legal troubles come from the fact that no one can see or verify that her children are okay. No one has been able to see or verify if these children are with somebody in their care and custody. That's the issue. A lot of people believe that the children are deceased and that Miss Vallow should be charged with murder. The problem with that, like we've talked about in lots of cases, or if there is no body, it's very difficult to say somebody's actually deceased. And this brings up an interesting issue of compulsory joinder. We'll talk about that in just a moment. So first, let's take a look at the facts that the government is relying upon to charge Lori Vallow for desertion of her children. First, Lori Vallow is the legal parent and guardian of Tylee and JJ Vallow. Nobody has seen or verifiably heard from Tylee since September 8th of 2019. Nobody has heard from JJ since September 23rd of 2019. When Lori Vallow was in Hawaii with her new husband, number 5, Chad DeBell, since the beginning of December of 2019, nobody has seen JJ or Tylee with either one of them. The condominium that was occupied by Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell in Hawaii had no personal belongings or effects of anyone other than Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell. The medication prescribed to JJ had not been refilled in the state of Idaho at the time that JJ was verifiably with Lori Vallow. Tylee's financial transaction card was in the possession of Lori Vallow, even though Tylee is not with Lori Vallow or had been found with Lori Vallow. Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell have represented to Chad's family that Lori has no juvenile children. Lori Vallow claimed she was going to homeschool JJ, but she is not with JJ, and no other educational facility has requested JJ's school records to enroll him. There's been no verification of another caregiver for JJ Vallow or Tylee at this time. That on or about January 30th, 2020, Lori Vallow failed to comply with a court order to produce the minor children to the Rexburg, Idaho Police Department or the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare within 5 days of being served with an order to do so. The police also believe that Lori Vallow provided verifiably false information to the police department by telling the police that JJ was located in Arizona with Melanie Gibb. The police believe that this false information obstructed and delayed the investigation into the location of JJ by requiring the police to investigate a false lead, and that Lori Vallow solicited Melanie Gibb to corroborate the false information Lori gave to the police. The police also believe that Lori Vallow solicited or requested that Melanie Gibb provide false information to the police regarding the location of JJ, which would have further obstructed and/or delayed the investigation by the Idaho police. Now, the information coming regarding Melanie Gibb was that Melanie Gibb had contacted the police and informed them that both Chad DeBell and Lori Vallow called Melanie on November 26th of 2019 at separate times and asked her to tell the police that she had JJ, and even though JJ was not with her. Melanie Gibb informed the police that she declined Chad and Lori's request. Additionally, she established that the statements made to law enforcement by Lori Vallow on November 26 was false, and that Lori Vallow knew that the statement was in fact false. Now, the police have obtained many search warrants in the case of Lori Vallow, specifically her apartment located at 565 Pioneer Road in Rexburg, Idaho. A search warrant for Melanie Boudoz, Lori Vallow's niece, also located at 565 Pioneer Road, but different apartment numbers, although they live right next door to each other. Alex Cox, Lori's brother's apartment, located at 565 Pioneer Road, number 107, also located in Idaho. And what they discovered from the search of those apartments was that the clothing in Lori's apartment had been removed. Other furniture was still remaining in the apartment. There was a search warrant executed on November 27th of Lori Vallow's storage unit, located in Rexburg, Idaho as well. In that storage unit, the police found blankets and pictures of JJ and pictures of Ty Lee. There was also a backpack with JJ's initial on it and toys that appeared appropriate for a young boy, winter clothing, children's clothing, bikes and scooters, and a photo album. Through phone records, investigators were able to determine that Ty Lee had accompanied Lori Vallow, Alex Cox, and JJ on a day trip to Yellowstone National Park on September 8th of 2019. Via a search warrant, police also obtained photos from Lori Vallow's iCloud account of Ty Lee in Yellowstone National Park at this time, which was date-stamped September 8th of 2019. That apparently is the last time the police can find any record of Ty Lee being with Lori Vallow. The police have also been unable to find any witnesses who can verify that they have seen Ty Lee since September 8th of 2019. Search warrants were also obtained from American Airlines, and they confirmed that only Chad DeBell and Lori Vallow flew to Kauai via American Airlines on December 1st of 2019. There was no information whatsoever that any children were accompanying them. The Idaho police asked the police in Kauai to monitor the home of Chad DeBell and Lori Vallow in Hawaii, and at no time did anyone see any children at their residence. On January 26th of 2020, search warrants were served on the persons and vehicle of Chad DeBell and Lori Vallow. The search warrant was served on the condominium also located as to where they were staying. In the garage, police found two beach chairs, two yoga fitness mats, and two beach towels. There were no items in the garage that appeared to belong to minor children, and there was nothing found in the condominium that appeared to belong to Ty Lee or JJ. Additionally, there was nothing found in the condominium that would indicate that a 7-year-old boy had been there, such as clothing, books, or medication. It was also discovered through the course of investigation and search warrants that JJ had a service dog for his autism. This dog was named Bailey and was trained by Dog Training Elite out of Arizona. On July 22nd, Lori Vallow sent an email requesting that Dog Training Elite in Arizona find another family for Bailey due to change in life circumstances. Dog Training Elite picked up the dog on August 30th of 2019. Also discovered through interviewing Chad DeBell's parents, Jack and Sheila DeBell, in Springfield, Utah, that they confirmed that both Chad and Lori told them in November that Lori Vallow was an empty nester. Now, in the initial disclosures that had to be produced, we know that there are police recordings of Jack and Sheila Daybell. We have the Yellowstone security video, the Idaho Falls airport security video, interviews by Natalie and Ian Polaski, the Moore security video from Yellowstone, Melanie Bordeaux's interview, Larry and Kay Woodcock interview, another interview by Melanie Bordeaux. Usually that means the police go back and look for an explanation as to inconsistencies based upon other interviews. And there are some 571 photographs that have been turned over to the defense in this particular case already. Additionally, there's at least three officers' body cams, particularly the footage that has been produced as well. So that, in a nutshell, is the case against Lori Vallow. One would also think that the statements made by Chad Daybell to have another lie that the children were in fact with her would be an obstruction charge as well, but nothing has been charged absolutely yet. The Idaho police have indicated that this case will continue to be investigated. So the next question is that Lori Vallow has gone through several attorneys throughout these proceedings. Now, obviously, she had temporary counsel in Hawaii that argued for a bond reduction that was pretty much unsuccessful as the court kept it at $5 million, which was not surprising. The court was going to honor and respect the original state's request that the bond remain at that particular amount and that they could address that amount when she got back to Idaho. At the bond reduction hearing in Idaho, it was reduced from $5 million to $1 million, and now Lori Daybell remains there. Throughout the proceedings in Idaho, Ms. Daybell's, for lack of a better term, main counsel would be Mr. Means. The next issue that we want to discuss as it relates to the Lori Vallow matter today is her attorney, Mark Means. Who is this guy? Now, he's been, for lack of a better term, kind of the lead counsel since Ms. Vallow arrived in Idaho. It's also clear that the attorneys that recently were allowed to withdraw from the case because of an ethical conflict, that was Brian Webb and Edwina Elcox, were clearly the criminal defense attorneys in this case. It doesn't take much to look up Mr. Mark Means' website on the internet that basically says he does personal injury, family law, bankruptcy, and some mediation. I don't know what his criminal background is when it comes to criminal law. But normally people would advertise and say, this is my experience. These are the type of cases that I have done. The other attorneys that were on the case previously, Brian Webb and Edwina Elcox, had criminal law experience. It becomes clear from their website that they do other work as well, as do lots of attorneys, particularly when you're in a less populated state, you cannot rely upon the influx of just criminal law cases. And frankly, lots of people do personal injury work, as does my firm, because, well, it pays well. But it would appear that Mr. Means, and I'm not questioning, he may have a lengthy experience, but based on what I've been able to find, I can't find anything that says that he was either previously a prosecutor or a defense attorney. If I'm wrong, I'm sure somebody will let me know, and that's okay. My search has not revealed any of that type of experience. Now, I think one of the other interesting legal issues as it relates to the Lori Vallow matter is a legal concept called compulsory joinder. Now, that term is probably foreign to most people. In fact, I've known prosecutors that were not aware of that particular term. And what that really means is that if the state is aware of or wants to prosecute a defendant, they have to kind of lump all those cases together so that they can't just keep stacking cases up against a defendant. So, for example, if you had a case in jurisdiction A and you knew, or the district attorney knew, that in jurisdiction B, C, and D, there were going to be other cases coming down. There's other jurisdictions there, obviously. But they should try to bring them all together in one particular spot, particularly if it's related to one criminal episode, all right? Normally, you're not going to be prosecuted on that, but usually if it's like a string of burglaries, things like that, that's usually when it comes in and it's a bigger overall kind of, let's say, a racketeering type of charge. However, here, if Lori Vallow, let's say, is either convicted or pleads guilty, and then ultimately they discover, say, for example, you know, deceased remains of the children, could then they bring a charge for murder? Well, if I was her attorney, I would say, hey, you all were new of this. You believe that these children are deceased. So you had your shot to charge her and you failed to do so. Therefore, you couldn't bring those charges. Now, it may never be an issue at all. Who knows? Maybe these children will pop up, but I think common sense is telling us otherwise that that's probably not going to be the case. But the prosecution has their shot of going forward. The particular statute that they charge, this abandonment, is apparently rarely used in the criminal context. It's more used in the family law, domestic, you know, basically saying you're a bad person and we're going to take your children away from you. Rarely is it used in a criminal context. So we'll see how things play out. We'll see if Lori Vallow gets new counsel. I would love to know what the ethical conflict is. However, we will never, ever know. An ethical conflict could arise from basically irreconcilable differences that you have between your client. It could be something as simple as a potential witness in the case was previously represented by their law firm. They may know somebody in the case, given it's a small town, and they may not be able to get around that. It's simply unclear, and the attorneys never have to reveal an ethical conflict. In fact, they never should reveal an ethical conflict. I personally thought originally it was for financial reasons. However, they would have to state that if it was financial reasons, they were unable to comply with the terms of a written fee agreement, something along those lines. But clearly it's ethical. They're getting off the case. They're gone. Nobody objected. We'll see if Mark Means brings in co-counsel. I have a suspicious feeling that funds are drying up rather quickly and that Miss Vallow may soon have the representation of the public defender. We'll see if I'm wrong. We'll see how things go. Next on the docket, public outrage grows to keep Crystal Lee Kenny in custody. For those of you who don't recall, Crystal Lee Kenny pled guilty to a Class 6 felony in relation to her assisting Patrick Frazee killing Kelsey Barrett and disposing of her remains. I guess I should say former nurse Crystal Lee Kenny testified against Patrick Frazee and received a sweetheart of a sentence of 3 years in the Colorado Department of Corrections. Well, a lot of recent events have taken place, and guess what? After only 2 months in prison, Crystal Lee Kenny's counsel is asking for an early release. The district attorney that prosecuted both Patrick Frazee and nurse Crystal Lee Kenny has stated that they completely object to any early release whatsoever, and that frankly, a 2 month term of incarceration where somebody basically was a co-conspirator in the murder of a very vibrant young mother would diminish the seriousness of the offense charged and is completely unacceptable. I personally believe that the parole board will not release Crystal Lee Kenny. There's no good reason for her to do so other than she could possibly say, please let me out. I'm not a danger to the community. However, she, by her own admissions, stated that she was on three occasions going out to, in fact, kill Kelsey Barrett, but chickened out all three times. The mere fact that she even considered that and took a substantial step to go do that would suggest she is a danger to the community. I don't think she's going anywhere. Next on the docket, Harvey Weinstein gets a little more time. Well, it's at least asking for a little more time. And we're not talking about the time in the New York Department of Corrections. No, we're talking his attorneys in the civil case need additional time to conduct discovery. That's basically taking depositions, asking for production of documents to come forward. Now, I'm not sure exactly why these attorneys are not asking for a stay until all of the criminal proceedings have been done, but each state's very from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and I'm sure they're doing what they believe is in the best interest of their client, even though a lot of people don't like him because obviously Mr. Weinstein has been convicted of some very serious sexual offenses and will more than likely die in prison. There have been reports that Harvey Weinstein has contracted the COVID-19 virus while in custody. Of course, he also had some heart issues while he was in custody and fell as well. Given the age of Mr. Weinstein and the fact that most people in the Department of Corrections, just about anywhere, the average life expectancy is about 70 years of age, it would be greatly anticipated that Mr. Weinstein would not make it to freedom. We'll see if he makes it to California to face the charges that were filed alleging very similar acts as which he was found guilty of in the state of New York. As we brought you information last week, R. Kelly, who is facing lots of charges in multiple jurisdictions for sexual misconduct, is asking to be released and basically released on pretrial release with an ankle monitor given the COVID-19 outbreak, as he believes that he is in danger of acquiring the virus. Now, I can tell you, I received a memo today that the Federal Bureau of Prisons is putting everyone on a 14-day lockdown, so that will greatly decrease the chances of R. Kelly acquiring the COVID-19 virus, and so he probably should be okay. I personally believe that his request will be denied, given that he has to deal with multiple jurisdictions. Now, as in most cases that requires any kind of modification of bond, there's a Victims' Rights Act where the victim has to be notified and their position has to be stated to the court via the United States Attorney. And there's a couple of people that believe R. Kelly should not be released. One is the family of his girlfriend, Jocelyn Savage. And the Savage family attorney, Gerald Griggs, says if Kelly is released, it would place Jocelyn back in the hands of a predator. Not only that, but the family claims it would also put her at risk for potentially being infected by COVID-19. Jocelyn's family says it believes the best option for her to continue to socially and physically distance herself from Kelly, adding he is, quote, right where he belongs, end quote. Penned up in Chicago's detention facility while he awaits trial in Illinois federal court. One of Kelly's other alleged victims, Lisa Van Allen, had even a stronger reaction to his request for release, saying, quote, this isn't Monopoly. There's no get-out-of-jail-free card, end quote. Not for an infected toe or for a pandemic. You do the crime, you do the time, just like the rest of the inmates, end quote. She also added to R. Kelly, put your grown man pants on and deal with it like the rest of the world's doing. R. Kelly has probably had better days. I think they're only going to continue to get worse as the days go by. Next on the docket, would you like a lime with that corona? Yes, yes. We've brought you many, many stories regarding people who have spit on or threatened police officers that they have the coronavirus and therefore they should not arrest them or basically in some sort of retaliation against the police. Continuing that fashion, we have a woman from Colorado by the name of Brenda Johnson. She apparently was involved in a small crash involving four parked vehicles around 7:22 a.m. on Sunday morning. Obviously, the police believe that she was under the influence of drugs or alcohol or a combination of both. Apparently, Miss Johnson, while being booked in for DUI, spit on an Arvada police officer and said, quote, there's some corona for you. Now all you need is a lime, end quote. Now, Ms. Johnson is 62 years of age, and she is now being investigated for second-degree assault on a peace officer. That's the most serious charge, given she also is charged with driving under the influence, hit and run, and several other traffic charges. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know how things are taking place in your jurisdiction, but assault on a peace officer used to be very, very serious. Here in the state of Colorado, it carried a mandatory minimum sentence of between 5 and 16 years. And it wasn't just police officers, it was firefighters, nurses, and things of that nature. People that were coming in contact with people and they're putting their lives at risk, at danger, and people go and spit on them or throwing feces on them. It's just not acceptable behavior. It used to be rather serious. Well, in the reform movement to decriminalize lots of things and make things less serious, the Colorado legislature has made such conduct now probation eligible. Now, I don't know what the criminal history is of Ms. Johnson. She's 62 years old. She more than likely may have an alcohol problem given her current situation, and she is presumed innocent. We would give her that. These police officers go out there and deal with jerks and drunk jerks on a daily basis. And if they can't have the protection of being protected, that if somebody does something like this to them, why would people want this job any further? And I've said this all along, like any profession, there are good police officers, there are bad police officers. There's good attorneys, there's bad attorneys. There's good doctors, there's bad doctors. Absolutely. And the good ones deserve protection, just like any one of us. Could you imagine what you would want if somebody spit on you and they said that they were infected by the coronavirus? Use your common sense. The Colorado legislature may want to reconsider that sentencing option for police officers and firefighters and nurses as well. And finally on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, unlike Ms. Johnson, our dumb criminal contestant of the day didn't have to spit on anybody. Oh, no, no, no. Serena Henry, when being pulled over for an arrest in New Mexico, got a little more creative. She didn't hold up a little sign that said, "I'm infected with corona." No, she didn't do that. She did not spit on the police officer. Thank goodness she did not do that. But what did she do? She told the police officers that, "I'm Beyonce." It never hurts to claim that you are a music superstar to try to, you know, pull the famous card not to get arrested. But you at least ought to try to look like Beyonce. I mean, take a look. Photo of Beyonce. Photo of Miss Henry. Beyonce, Miss Henry. Needless to say, the police officers didn't fall for it. So, Miss Henry, you are our dumb criminal contestant winner of the day. We'll see if you have what it takes to be the dumb criminal contestant of the week, which we will have you all decide this Friday. That's all we've got for Crime Talk today. Thanks for watching. Have a great day.